Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Now, back to Real Ghost Stories Online. Live.
855-853-4802 if you want to share your real ghost story with us, or you can write in on the website at realghoststoriesonline.com. I'm now about to read a ghost story.
What's in that cup, by the way?
Actually, it is this. It's a refreshing beverage. It's a non-alcoholic beverage. It's called Breeze.
With
it has THC. Oh. No, it's a THC drink. If you can get them, because I think you can get these anywhere in the country now. I would say lovely alternative to alcohol. I really would. If you're wanting to cut back or not do it and still kind of get, you know, the feeling. Yeah, lovely. I'm very pro that. Okay, let's go into our first story here. And this is how it starts. You'll never really know the soul of a house until you live in it. A building might look ordinary, harmless, even from the outside, bricks, mortar, paint, the kind of thing you pass on your way to work without a second thought. But once you step inside, once you let your guard down, the walls have a way of showing you exactly what they've been keeping secret. And sometimes those secrets have teeth. This is Amy's story. She was just 17 when it began, a teenager who thought the scariest thing in front of her was becoming a mother before she was technically an adult. She left her family home with her partner, Kev, after finding out she was pregnant. They were young, broke, and determined to piece together something resembling a stable life. For 6 months, they lived in a small bedsit in Sunderland, a kind of place you rent because it's all you can afford, the kind you'd never bother decorating because, you know, it's temporary. But then came the move that would define everything that followed. They saved, they scrapped, and they found a house back in Seaham, directly across from Amy's mother's place. For Amy, 8 months pregnant and exhausted, it felt like a victory, a chance to put down roots before the baby arrived. But on the very day they moved in, the house introduced itself, and not in a way you'd want to remember. There wasn't much furniture, just essentials and, of course, baby things, the crib, the drawers, a tiny wardrobe. Her dad and Kev set themselves up in the back bedroom, assembling a cot and heaving around an oak chest of drawers, while Amy, huge, hormonal and tired, busied herself downstairs with ornaments for the fireplace. And that's when it came. A deafening crash from upstairs, so loud it rattled her chest. She rushed to check, expecting to find splinted wood or something broken beyond repair. But when she asked what had happened, her dad and Kev just stared at her blankly. They hadn't heard a thing. She brushed it off. Pregnancy does strange things. Baby brain, heightened senses, all of those cliches people lean on. She was convinced herself it was nothing, just the kind of noise old houses make as they settle into their foundations. But deep down, she already knew this wasn't a house that had ever settled. That night, after a day of arranging what little they owned, Amy decided on a bath and a takeaway. She climbed the odd staircase, first four open steps up in the dining room, then a turn left, another climb, and an extended, and it ended in a wall, like the house was cut from a strange blueprint. The left, the bathroom, to the right, a long corridor stretching 20 feet, with her bedroom at the far end, and the baby's room immediately at the opening. No windows, just one light switch, positioned awkwardly outside the bathroom door. That corridor, dark, narrow, airless, set her on edge instantly. She described it as fear without logic, the way your stomach tightens when you feel eyes on you in an empty room. She flicked the light on before stepping into the bath, the water filled, steam curling upward, but the peace, it didn't last. Footsteps outside the door, they were not quiet, uncertain ones, but deliberate, heavy. Then the scraping thud of furniture being shifted. Amy tensed, waiting for Kev to call out, to make a joke, to explain, but nope, he never came. 20 minutes of noises and then silence. When she finally opened the bathroom door, the corridor light was off. She knew she'd left it on. She went downstairs, heart hammering, but said nothing. She told herself it was nerves. She told herself she was imagining things. Midnight came, bedtime. Kev went first, flicking the hall light on at the top of the stairs. Then he froze. His confusion was written across his face. Amy caught up, and what she saw knocked the breath from her lungs. The oak drawers, those impossibly heavy drawers her father had shoved into the far corner of the nursery, were now on their side in the middle of the upstairs hallway. Boxes piled neatly on top, both bedroom doors stood wide open, and directly above the upturned drawers, the attic hatch hung open like a gaping mouth. Kev turned to Amy. Did you do this? The question was absurd. She was 8 months pregnant, barely able to hoist herself up the stairs, let alone drag solid oak across the floor and climb into the loft. Impossible. That was the first undeniable sign, the one they couldn't explain away. Something in that house wanted him to know it was there. The days that followed weren't quiet, but the disturbances softened into something deceptively playful. Teacups vanishing, only to be found later in bizarre places. The garden, the bedroom, perched on top of the fridge. Amy blamed herself. Baby brain again. Until it started happening to Kev, too. By January, their son Matthew was born. The very first thing Kev did when they came home from the hospital was put the kettle on. But the cups and tea bags were missing. He searched. He was annoyed until he reached the hallway. And there they were. Every cup lined in a perfect row across the floor. A tea bag in each. The rest of the box scattered like confetti around them. It should have been funny, like a prank pulled by a mischievous child, but both of them knew it wasn't. The air was wrong, too. It was too cold, too deliberate. That night, Amy woke to the sound of Matthew crying, or so she thought. She sat up, eyes fixed on the cot at the foot of their bed, and that's when she saw her, an old woman, walking toward her newborn. Amy was frozen, not with terror, but with something worse. Paralysis. She couldn't scream, couldn't move, could only watch as the woman leaned over her baby's crib and bent close, as if kissing her forehead. Then the figure straightened, turned to Amy and smiled, proud, gentle. Then she vanished. When Amy could finally move again, she stumbled to the cot. Matthew slept peacefully, unharmed. In the morning, she told herself it had been a dream, a hallucination, maybe stress, exhaustion, hormones. But then came the photograph. A few days later, Kev's mother showed her a picture of his great-grandmother, Ada. The same cardigan, the same red slippers. Amy nearly dropped the photo. She'd never seen this woman before, never even heard her name. Kev hadn't either. She died 20 years earlier. But there she was, a stranger who had leaned into her son's crib that very night. From that night forward, the house no longer felt like theirs. It didn't matter how many pictures they hung, how many cozy touches they tried to add, or how many pieces of shiplap were attached to the wall. I added that part in just for fun. The walls pushed back. The air itself seemed to reject them. And though the old woman's appearance hadn't felt malicious, there was no comfort in knowing something could simply wander into their bedroom, lean over their baby, and then vanish. The weeks slipped by and the house kept up its games. Sound in the nights, bangs, footsteps, the unmistakable rhythm of someone moving about when nobody should have been. Things vanishing, then reappearing in places too strange to be coincidence. And then the mist. It was like steam or smoke, not the kind you could blame on a draft or a bath. It was thicker, heavier, almost tangible. Sometimes it pooled in corners. Other times it stretched across stairwells like a curtain, forcing them to walk through it to reach their room. It never lingered long, but long enough to make them stop, long enough to make them question their own eyes. And then there were the shadows, dark figures caught at the edges of vision, always fleeting, always gone. When they turned their heads, most often on the staircase, as though something liked to perch there, watchdogging. Sometimes in the bedroom near the cot. Cav dismissed them as tricks of the light at first, but Amy knew better. She always knew better. One evening, her mother came over to babysit. Amy and Cav decided on a quiet night in, wine, television, a rare chance to feel normal, but the illusion shattered when the voices floated down from upstairs again. They weren't muffled or faint. They were clear. Men and women talking, arguing. Amy's first instinct was panic. Someone had broken in. She grabbed the fire poker from the bedside, the hearth, where Kev stumbled into the kitchen for a weapon of his own. Adrenaline makes fools of all of us, and he reached for a drawer and came back gripping a potato masher. A fire poker and a potato masher. Two young parents, armed and ridiculous, climbing the stairs to confront intruders that weren't there. When they reached the landing, there was silence. Empty rooms, no explanation, but the fear didn't leave with the quiet. That's when Kev decided to test it. He pulled out his phone, switched on the sound recorder, and left it in the upstairs hallway. They went back downstairs, sat in the tense silence, waiting. 30 minutes later, he retrieved it. They pressed play. At first, it was faint, almost playful, children laughing, running. Tiny feet clattering across floors that should have been still. Then a man's voice, sharp, scolding, as though telling the children to stop. The laughter cut off, a few minutes of silence, then chaos. A man and woman screaming at each other, their argument escalating into sobs, curses, sounds of something breaking. And just before the recording ended, her voice, a woman's voice, shrieking with raw fury. It was hard to totally make out, but what they got out of it was, "This is my effing house." Even remembering it years later, Amy's skin still crawls. They hadn't just been eavesdropping on echoes of the past. They'd been told directly that they weren't welcome. After that, the dreams began, nightmares that seemed too vivid, too shared to be just the product of restless minds. Amy and Kev both dreamt of violence, of people fighting, of watching through eyes that weren't their own. In the morning, they woke feeling drained, haunted, as though something had fed on their sleep. Amy's dreams stopped after a month, but Kev's lingered. He never told her, not then, but long after they moved. He admitted he dreamt of their son being hurt again and again. The house wasn't content to stay in their dreams. Around Christmas, Kev's little sister came to visit, 13 years old, eager to spend time with her brother's new family. They told her nothing about the house. Why scare her? She went to bed smiling around 10. By 11, she was hysterical, crying, shaking, refusing to go back to the bedroom. And for the next 3 weeks, she stayed. She wouldn't explain to this day. She still won't. Whatever she saw in that room, it broke her trust in silence. A few days later, Amy and Kev's sister, Grandma, decided to bake. They just come back from the shop with bags of flour, sugar, eggs, laughing, teasing Kev. They walked into the kitchen and stopped cold because they weren't alone. A girl stood in the kitchen, not a ghostly blur or a shadow, but a girl as real as either of them. She couldn't have been older than 15, hair tied in a neat ponytail, a plain navy blue dress, and the strangest part, the expression on her face. Shock. She looked just as surprised to see them as they were to see her. And then she was gone. Amy would never forget that face. Not the faint blush in her cheeks, not the wide eyes. It wasn't the look of a predator or even someone malicious. It was the look of someone caught trespassing in their own home. And that's the story.
Good Lord. When you mentioned the grandma part, I thought,
This is sweet, right?
This is taking a turn. It was grandma, and they were reading into it, and grandma's just being nice, like, welcome home. Here's a bunch of teacups in your hallway. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was going to be all sweet.
Mm-hmm.
It turned on me.
What I wonder about what got me about the surprise at the end of this person looking like you're in my space.
Yeah.
What I wonder about that, we had a story a long time ago, and this was one that's always kind of stuck with me. The story essentially went, this woman was dreaming about her childhood home. In the dream, she was there, and then she walked into the backyard, and it was nighttime, and she saw the campfire pit was going, and then she walked over to see what was going on there, and there was a family there, and she didn't know who they were, but it was just a different family, but it was, you know, at her childhood home, and she was just stood there watching. And then in her dream, she notices, like, one of the kids are looking at her and going, you know, there's a ghost. There's a ghost. And she's like, you know, what? And then she wakes up. This is her story. It says that she goes back to actually visit the house when she was in town and goes to the door. It's like a screen door, you know, patio type door. And one of the kids goes, that's the girl who's up by the campfire the other night.
She was astral planning, is I think what they call that.
Is that the word? Yeah, I don't know. But yeah. Is astral planing, astral projecting, astral?
There you go. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if there's probably a difference. I don't know the difference though. But yeah, I mean, that makes me wonder about things like that, where are ghosts, quote unquote, are they always ghosts, or are they people having dreams? And they just happen to come over into real life sometimes. I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting thing to think about.
That's my sister, Kathy, talks about that. Like, kind of the time-space continuum kind of gets out of alignment. And so somebody else ends up on, you know, something that maybe has already happened and you're seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really like it's a ghost. It's like you're seeing something that actually happened for just a second, and then it's gone. And
sure.
Yeah, I don't know. But damn, that story had everything in it.
Have you ever had a dream that was like different than others, where it was like, this is so damn real? Like, I almost feel like I'm actually.
Oh, yeah.
There.
Mm-hmm.
But it's current day. It's not like you're like really there back in time or something. It's just like, I'm there right now.
So I heard this theory recently of when you are in a dream state and you're actually more like in an astral projection state, you know, that feeling that when you fall, everybody has it and you jolt awake.
That's fun. That's
you coming back into your body. So you are actually someplace else, but that's the moment you come back in your body.
I think it's more like your nerves and such are in a quick state between whatever you're falling, and you're like, oh my God. Then suddenly you're back and your body then says, stop doing that shit. That's not real. But that kind of gives you the, I don't know. I think that might, I don't know.
I'd never heard that theory before. And I'm like, it's kind of interesting that it could be. What do you think, Todd?
Well, I just think there's so many things that we don't understand half the stuff that's going on in our lives.
Sure.
And so I think that all of this is a probability. I remember, you know, watching one of the ghost hunting shows not last 20 years or something like that. And they were at a location and they were saying, you know, hey, princess, can you hear us? Blah, blah, blah. And, you know, they're getting no response. And there was literally a princess who lived in this place. And when they listened back to it, they actually had her voice and she's like, yes, I can hear you, but I can't see you. Where are you?
Oh, God.
So they were talking to the ghost who was hearing them. And so then the question becomes, is it like you said, Carol, a time continuum thing where maybe they just kind of cross paths for a very short period of time and this woman's living there in the 1800s and, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
Are we as much a ghost to the ghost when we see them?
Exactly.
I think so.
Well,
I think
that was kind of the thing with the dream state and your astral projecting, which that means like you could be a ghost in someone else's life and you're there for just a little bit. Maybe they saw you, I don't know, and then you get sucked back into your body. I don't know. Maybe.
I guess anything's possible. I don't recall learning that one in astral projection class.
101.
101. I think we had it like right after like sewing. It was like sewing and then astral projection. And the kids, the way that they made fun of that astral projection, my God, you know. Thanks for watching and listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. Be sure to hit that subscribe button so you don't miss any of the many ghost stories that we put out to you multiple times a day, 365 days a year, right here at Real Ghost Stories Online. And share your real ghost story with us as well. You can call in 24/7 at 855-853-4802 or write in on our website at realghoststoriesonline.com. Subscribe, share your story, and then come back and watch us live Monday nights, 8 p.m. Central on our YouTube channel for Real Ghost Stories Online Live. And hit subscribe so you don't miss any of those episodes that we put out for you all week long right here at Real Ghost Stories Online.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.